Welcome to the Industrial Talk Podcast with Scott McKenzie. Scott is a passionate industry professional dedicated to transferring cutting-edge, industry-focused innovations and trends while highlighting the men and women who keep the world moving. So put on your hard hat, grab your work boots, and let's go.
All right, thank you very much for joining the Industrial Talk Podcast. This platform, this industrial platform, is dedicated to you, the industrial and manufacturing professionals all around the world. You are bold, you are brave, you dare greatly. You're changing the lives and, of course, you're changing the world all around you. That's why we celebrate you on this particular podcast on a daily basis, and that's why we love you. That's right. It's love. All right. An interview with a gentleman by the name of Brian Miller, and we're just going to be talking a lot about warehousing. We're going to be talking about supply chain. We're going to be talking about order fulfillment, and given the fact that we have this pandemic, Brian Miller, CEO, founder of Easy China Warehouse, that's got to be a part of your thought process as you start to go into this next normal, whatever we call it. Let's get cracking with the interview. You know, it's interesting because we have all sort of been going through this whole process, this new normal, next normal, next success, you name it. The pandemic hit us really hammered your supply chain for many companies. And it's been an interesting journey. And I've had a number of conversations with manufacturers that are, you know, onshoring, reshoring, nearshoring, all the strategies that they're considering just because the challenges of this particular pandemic and how it impacted their business, their supply chain, their sources, their manufacturers. And this one with Brian Miller is really interesting because he has a warehouse in Shenzhen, China, and he does a lot of order fulfillment, does a lot with, does a lot with Amazon, Shopify. And let's put it this way. If you're still sourcing from China, if you're still manufacturing stuff, he has a great solution and he knows exactly what to do. And I think going forward, just, you know, between you and me, I think you're going to have a portfolio of how you manage your business here stateside and mix it up with a little of onshoring, you know, sourcing those critical components here, still sourcing products over in China or Asia in general. You might have to pull in a Mexico strategy on that. And I think that there's a huge amount of opportunities to optimize whatever that portfolio looks like to you. Now, we're going to have a great interview with a company that is out of Colorado. It's called Cap Logistics, and we're going to have this conversation again because this is really important stuff, really important stuff. One last thing before we get on to the interview. Again, I want to make sure you understand. Real keys to success, and I believe with my heart as I continue to sort of, you know, educate and look at other people who are putting out some great content, is that I'm more and more convinced that one, you got to collaborate, you got to innovate, and you got to educate, and you got to do it with a sense of speed, and you got to keep that up. You can't let your go back to the normal or the you know, business as usual. That's how I feel. That's what I'm thinking, right? And I think the biggest component, it better be, outside of all of the other stuff, is that how are you, how's your company, how are you going to make money in this new normal, next opportunity, whatever we want to call it, because it's not business as usual. So I challenge you that you're going to hang out with people who are bold, brave, and dare greatly. I do that every single day. If you find people that are bold, brave, and dare greatly, and you want to change the world, you're going to have to find those individuals because they're going to challenge you. They're going to challenge you because you're going to have to do, you know, you're going to have to collaborate. You're going to have to innovate, and you're going to have to educate as much as you possibly can. And those are the people that you want to do that with. All right. That's my little, you know, rah-rah speech of getting you out there. Brian Miller is on the hot seat on the Industrial Talk Podcast. He is the CEO and founder of Easy China Warehouse, and we're talking supply chain. We're talking about all of the challenges. He brings in the great point of view from Asia, and the challenges that they were facing as a result of this pandemic. It's a great conversation. I highly recommend. So for you listeners out there, Brian Miller, enjoy.
Hey, Brian, welcome to the Industrial Talk Podcast. So glad that you are here. You're broadcasting from China, which is just an absolutely amazing thing. I just love that. And we've got a great topic on hand. But before we get into that, give us a little background on who you are and what you're all about.
Sure. Thanks for having me. My name's Brian Miller. I'm originally from Connecticut in the U.S. And for the past 10 years, I've lived and worked in China. I have started an e-commerce company at the moment and also an e-commerce logistics company. So we manufacture in China and we also help e-commerce companies ship from China. And that's what our main business is, manufacturing and logistics.
You're an expert. You've been there for 10 years. You know the culture. You know the sort of the business environment at this particular time. When you say e-commerce, what is your e-commerce platform?
Yeah, sure. So we basically interface after someone manufactures a product and they own an online store, and we help them take their products from China and distribute it around the world, whether it be to other warehouses or directly to their end customer.
Well, see, that's going to be an interesting topic to discuss, because from my perspective, I see that there's a lot of challenges. Now, elephant in the room type of conversation. China as a whole has some challenging stuff going on, and the relationship between China and the world, China and the United States. Can you sort of give us a little background on what you see going on specifically to that?
Yeah, sure. So I think the tension is specifically between China and the U.S. And the world has kind of started during the Trump trade war that we've had over the past few years. Mm-hmm. And that kind of started to escalate the tensions. But I think now that the virus originated in China and a lot of countries in the world are, let's say, relatively unhappy with some of the maybe data that they think that came out of China, we are seeing further tension, let's say, between the U.S. And China and the rest of the world in China, for sure. And we're seeing it, you know, in the news there, and also as a Westerner living in China, you can tell there's a bit of tension for sure.
So what does that mean for business? So what does that mean? I mean, we depended on China for a lot of manufactured goods and the supply chain and the logistics and everything that's associated with our economy. We depended on China. What do you see the impact to be?
Yeah, I think companies already, you know, during the trade war, they started to try to at least diversify their supply chains outside of China. And we saw kind of a push to try to do that as tariffs ramped up. And I think as the coronavirus continues and tensions increase between China and the rest of the world, I think this will speed up the diversification of people's supply chains to other countries. I don't think it's going to come back to the U.S., to be honest. I think it's just going to move to other low-cost countries around the world. And we see that already with lower value products from China, but I think it will accelerate going forward.
And the reason you won't see the manufacturing of some of these projects stateside is why? You made a comment about you don't see it coming back to the United States, maybe other low-cost providers. Why do you see it that way?
Yeah, I just think that, you know, the U.S. system is kind of set up where it's easy to import into the U.S. Tariffs are relatively low. And also at the same time, the U.S. doesn't have the manufacturing infrastructure that it used to have a while ago as a lot of manufacturing moved to China. And so if you are going to move the supply chain back to the U.S., not only is it going to take a long time, but it's also very challenging because there's very different levels of the supply chain that you have to bring all the way back for it to work. And so given that the U.S. is relatively a shorter term planning kind of place and you know, each president changes very quickly, I find it hard to find a very cohesive, basically, you know, law that helps, you know, companies come back to the U.S.
what's the impact of other low cost manufacturing countries to China?
Yeah, I think other countries will benefit compared to China. So I think a lot of manufacturing has already, at least in textiles, has been moving to Bangladesh. Vietnam has been a winner of manufacturing, including Thailand and Malaysia. And I think these places will continue. India a little bit, but India has a lot of problems with their own infrastructure, which makes it a hard place to manufacture. But if India could get their act together, I think they could also win some business from China for sure.
Interesting. I can see that. I don't have really any insights into that, what's challenging within India. But just by the nature of business, looking for other options to diversify maybe their supply chain, their manufacturing base, something a little bit from their perspective, not mine. I don't have a dog in this fight, but something that has more long-term resilience. You're just going to get companies that just do that, right? They're going to look, at least, scan the landscape.
Yeah, I think also, I mean, luckily for China, people are still going to manufacture in China, and for a few reasons. And it mainly is based around the infrastructure that they've built, whether it be digital infrastructure, but also the physical infrastructure that surrounds the factories. So by digitally, it's easy to go on Alibaba. It's easy to search out suppliers. There's a platform that provides you an easy way to find things. And then as far as the infrastructure, of course, we see that there's clusters of factories in China that produce all the same good. So you have a lot of manufacturing efficiency in that. And also the roads that go to the ports and the ports in China are incredibly efficient. And so because of this type of infrastructure, although like we are going to see some loss to other countries, I think China still has a competitive advantage, specifically against India for sure.
Yeah. On another note, there are a lot of, I can't decipher the code that's out there about how China handled the virus, the outbreak. Can you share with the listeners a little bit about how China handled the virus because you're there versus what we receive here? I sort of shut it down. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. Yeah, sure. I think it's good to have something to compare, at least, the U.S. and other countries too, when we look at the spread of the virus. And for China, at least, in December, we first kind of got an official announcement from China that there was this virus. And within the first 2 weeks of January, we saw the whole population wear masks. So we saw a very quick ramp up of people taking precautions personally. And within those first 2 weeks as well, all public places carried out temperature checks. So by public places, I mean supermarkets, malls, any place that you would go out to, you needed your temperature taken before going into them. And even my own apartment, they would check my temperature while going in, And so they very quickly also developed some phone applications that each person downloaded, and it gives any place that you go into your travel and health history and whether or not you're high or low risk. And so they started to use digitization of records in order to track people's movements and the spread of the virus as it went around China.
So what happens if they zapped you with the thermometer and you got a little temperature? What would happen?
Yeah, they would have you go to the hospital to be checked. So China also very effectively scaled out industrial testing. And by industrial testing, they were able to test large amounts of people for the virus at one time. And what's interesting to note, too, is I left China for a few weeks during the virus. And when I came back, I had to take a mandatory 14-day quarantine at my house, where I couldn't leave. I couldn't even walk out the door. My temperature was sent to the government twice a day that I had to do on my own. And I got two coronavirus checks. So on the 10th day and the 14th day, a doctor came to my door in a hazmat suit and actually gave me two coronavirus tests. So that's the type of measures that they were taking to reduce the amount of inbound cases and also cases within China. People had to quarantine within China to reduce the spread within the country.
How did that impact manufacturing in China? I mean, that shuts it down. I mean, you got a lot of people there, got a lot of testing to happen. You got a lot of coordination to take place. How did that impact manufacturing?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So at the end of January this year was Chinese New Year. And so after January and February, China opened up. But by open, I mean very slowly. So a lot of people were still quarantined. So that was the first problem. So you have a lot of migrant work in China that goes from the countryside to cities to work in factories. And those people were unable to get to the factories. So we had a labor shortage within China as far as factory owners being able to get work and labor. And then the second problem that we had was China started new safety regulations, and all commercial facilities needed to have a government inspector come to their facility to allow them to commence work. So if you can imagine, millions of factories all trying to get government inspectors to come to their place to approve them to get working. And they required us to have employees wear masks, take their temperature every day, disinfect our facility every day. So there were a lot of new regulations that we had to abide by in order to commence operations. And so we didn't see manufacturing really start to get back until March, in my opinion.
Yeah, I would imagine. I mean, for many of the listeners, when I went to China, I mean, the magnitude is huge. The people, the scale, the magnitude is just massive. And it's, and from my perspective, words don't really communicate the size. Case in point, I went to a little town called Chengshu. And it has like 4 million people in a little town. And it's like country, but it's the magnitude is massive. And to be able to get that economy moving again. But then you also have a demand side that is being impacted today. Reality is like you can manufacture like going down, but no, there's no demand. Is that impacting conditions on the ground in China?
Yeah, you're exactly, you hit the nail on the head. First, we had kind of a supply shock. So, I told you the factories couldn't open. And now we're seeing some demand shocks. So the rest of the world is, whether they're in partial or full quarantine or just getting out of quarantine type measures, you have, no one's buying things. And therefore, a lot of companies are not releasing the orders that they used to China. So we're seeing a lot of factories going on extended vacations for 1 to 6 months because they have no orders. So there is essentially shutting down. They're telling their workers, look, we're on break until we can get orders from overseas, which we don't know when that will happen, depending on, the condition of the virus abroad, basically.
Yeah, and I don't have an answer to that there because it's I don't know how you start that back up. Is that demand curve going to be a V or is it going to be a slow rise? I don't have a crystal ball, but I know that not China. And from a supply chain perspective, it's still in place. Nothing has really been cannibalized. So it's really one of those things where you can turn it on to a certain extent. But once again, we've got a challenging environment with demand. How has the virus affected the supply chain outside of the fact that you got a bunch of people that's like, hey, stay home right now. I don't know. How has it affected it?
Yeah. So definitely we have full capacity, at least in terms of production at the moment. We didn't until probably the end of March. So I'd say by the time we got to April this year, we had, 80 to 100% of production capacity back online. But we just haven't seen the demand coming from the rest of the world. And therefore, we've seen a lot of people lose their jobs, a lot of factory closures. And specifically domestically in China, we see a lot of bankruptcies, whether it be restaurants, whether it be places, you know, retail locations, all types of places that really need that consumer to walk into it. We've seen a lot of pain throughout the economy. And specifically as far as logistics go, we've seen a big increase in the demand for air freight to bring around personal protective equipment. At the same time, about all of the passenger flights around the world have been canceled. So a lot of people don't notice that 50% of air freight is shipped in the bellies of passenger aircraft.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, we had a massive, basically, supply squeeze and a huge demand increase because of all the equipment that, you know, hospitals needed around the world.
So let's just, where do you see it going? I mean, let's put on our future hat and let's sort of, do you see some trends taking place out there with the virus? What's the current condition in China from the from that perspective? What do you see?
Yeah, so China overall, I'd say each country kind of has their own approach to the virus and how they are kind of working with their population to mitigate the spread. And I'd say China took some of the most extreme measures compared to most countries. And with those extreme measures, we got quite good results. So we have very few new cases every day. And life is generally coming back to normal at this point, but we still do see small amounts of community spread in different places around China. So, and a lot of the restrictions, like I told you before, like temperature checks and things like that, people wearing masks has still not ended. So I still wear a mask every day. I still get my temperature checked every day. So I would say the country is still cautious, specifically the government is, and they are concerned about a second possible wave that might come. And the implications that it might have for the country. So I think, you know, not only China, but I think the rest of the world will continue to and should be on high alert until we get some type of medical solution, whether it be a vaccine or medicine to cure the virus. I don't think it's going to go away until we get one of those two.
Yeah, and so what I see and what I hear you saying is that you're probably China as a whole will continue these measures until for the foreseeable future. Just it is what it is. So masks, temperature, self-quarantine. Well, I can't say self mandatory quarantine if you and you know, all of the stuff and for a foreseeable future. Is that creating some inefficiencies as a whole? I mean, from a production perspective, if I have to constantly do that, or is it just a part of life right now?
Yeah, I would say specifically for international business, it's definitely not good. I mean, China has banned the entry of all foreign nationals at the moment. So even if you wanted to come and visit a factory and buy things, you couldn't come, right? And I assume even if they are to open the country as far as letting foreign nationals in, they're still going to require a 14-day quarantine. So I don't think you're going to be doing any business trips to China soon. I don't think anyone's going to want to. And I would guess that other countries are going to follow a similar suit where they require some type of verification that you don't have the virus or some type of quarantine while entering. At least the ones that have done a good job at controlling the amount of spread.
Yeah.
And so I think from that perspective, it's going to hurt the amount of face-to-face business we do.
That is an interesting point. And the reason for that is that it's not just like I can't get on a plane, which I could, you know, pre-virus, I could pop on a plane, go to a country, everything's wonderful and dandy and hunky-dory, and you conducted business, and you was face-to-face, and your handshaking, and all that good stuff, and life was good. Now, what we see is an extended challenge. Like, once again, China's still, outside of China, but in China, there's still the necessity, there's, like you said, the mass, the temperature, and you just can't fly into that. You can't just come from outside and fly into that particular controlled environment. And if other countries follow suit, which it looks like they might be,
you're going to just have to figure out how to conduct business in a really different way.
Yeah, for sure. Not just business, like just, you know, meetings and things like that. But specifically for us, we fulfill shipments for e-commerce companies, and our business has increased 300% from last year. So we're clearly seeing a very strong trend to people purchasing items online. And, you know, maybe previous people who didn't have accounts online to buy things online are getting used to that as being the normal. And I think this will push a stronger trend towards online purchases and online meetings and more remote type work.
See, that's pretty interesting. And I agree with you. I didn't really knew how much I took it for granted. I just did stuff online just because, well, I'm stuck here in front of a computer terminal anyway. Might as well go buy something here. Click done. And it just magically appears. And I didn't realize there's a segment of society as a whole that just didn't do that. I'd go to this and I'd go here and I just, and now that I can see how that has increased dramatically. I just, from that perspective, that's interesting. Huh? I don't have a crystal ball. I don't know. I think your points of what's taking place and how countries as a whole, including China, have really locked it down. They want to create sort of their economy, just like these little islands, to be able to do commerce, but you're not going in there. You're just not. That to me is right. That's a big aha moment.
Overall, like China's, and I think other countries will do it as well, that they spent so much energy, bringing down the spread of the virus and decreasing spread to almost none, that it'd be very hard for them to allow people to just freely come in because it would just mess up all the work they've done. And I think other countries that have been successful at, you know, containing the virus will do similar actions. And you're right, you'll have like little islands of countries doing business together, but you can't actually go to each other. You'll have to, you know, things will be shipped, you know, by planes and boats, but no one will see each other.
Isn't that just an interesting outcome? And you know, we're a global economy, and now we got to try to be a global economy without having that the ability to travel globally. It's right. For the foreseeable future and until we get some sort of resolution. Now, we're going to have to wrap this up. And are you active out on LinkedIn? And if anybody wants to get a hold of you, you're pretty accessible on LinkedIn.
Yeah, the best to find me would be search our company name, which is Easy China Warehouse. My name's Brian Miller, so it's too hard to find me with all the other Brian Millers.
That's true. There's a few out there on LinkedIn. So Easy China Warehouse, is it warehouse or? Let me see. I'm looking at
warehouse.
I want to make sure I just.
Easy China Warehouse.
Yeah. .com. And then you can reach out then, and that would be the best way. Now, you listeners out there, we're going to have every, you know, conceivable way of getting a hold of Brian here out on industrialtalk.com on his podcast. He also said, hey, for a giveaway, a 10% off the first shipment. What does that mean?
Yeah, so anyone that wants to ship their products out of China, whether it be by sea or air, anywhere around the world, will give you 10% off.
I like that. I like that a lot.
The current market rate that we sell our ships.
All right. Brian, thank you very much for joining the Industrial Talk Podcast. I loved the conversation. You had some great insights. All right, listeners. It looks like we've had a little interruption. We will be right back. Stay tuned. Do not go away.
You're listening to the Industrial Talk Podcast Network.
Hey, thank you very much, Brian Miller. That's Brian Miller, CEO, founder, Easy China Warehouse. Go out to Easy China Warehouse. It's a big, long URL, but .com it. Boom, there he is. He's got a great website out there. Easy to use, easy to navigate. He's all about getting product here and making it as simple as possible for you. Great conversation. Reach out to him. Everything will be at industrialtalk.com.
because you need to, you just need to understand your supply chain challenges. And I think that you're going to have a conversation with somebody like Brian, and you're going to have to look at how that fits in with your overall supply chain strategy, your sourcing strategy, your manufacturing strategy. He's out there, Easy China Warehouse. All right, I'm going to challenge you again. Be bold, be brave, dare greatly. That's what I always say. But I challenge you, hang out with people who are bold, brave, and dare greatly. And if you want to hang out with me, right here, hang out with me, because that's what we're all about. Bold, brave, daring greatly, because we want to change the world. Thank you for joining the Industrial Talk Podcast. We're going to be back with another great interview, so be safe.